Welcome, welcome, welcome. Where else?
Christina says, hello, Jarek.
Hi, Christina.
Where else do you party people from?
So as you're tuning in, the number should be going up right now. Number one, you want to put where you're tuning in from. Number two, we'd love to know three things you are grateful for. And we're going to go ahead and start the podcast, I think, as soon as we get a...
Yep, I'm rolling. So
we're good. We're rolling.
You guys didn't move around too much because the chair kind of squeaks sometimes.
Yeah. Oh,
perfect.
Yep. I'm rolling.
Perfect. Okay. Welcome to our Learn It, Live It, Give It podcast and our Facebook Live conversation. We're chatting with some wonderful guests. This is James Altucher you're looking at right now if you're viewing live on Facebook.
Hi there.
This is Pamela
Sisson. Sisson.
Right there. Hi, I'm Jarek. Nice to see you. And as we're tuning in, we're going to talk with James a little about what's going on, but I'd love to start with, for those people who may not be familiar, which I'm sure there's a very select few in the world who might not have crossed paths with your amazing podcast or read your book yet, but if they haven't yet, let's give them a little bit
of background. I would say 99.999% of the world has not yet, so...
Maybe. I don't think it's that large.
So we're good.
Because I always meet people... I just met the Uber driver who's driving us up here. He's like, oh, where are you guys going? I'm like, we're late for a podcast. I'm like, on what show? I'm like, James Altucher. He's like, oh, that's a great show. So trust me.
He was lying to you. He just wanted to get a higher tip or something.
I don't think so. But reciprocity might have been in motion. but people do know, and they are excited. I've had lots of friends. When we went and recorded for your show the first time 2 years ago in Miami, I had a lot of friends listening go like, whoa, you're on James' show. That's amazing. And they were so excited to reach out to me.
That's funny. Thank you for telling me that.
Yeah, I was excited too. I got to find out that lots of friends listen. But let's give them a little bit of kind of background on who you are. How did you get into podcasting? You have a really successful podcast. You have awesome books that are out there.
Sure. I've been in a lot of different fields. So yep. part of my whole thing, and we've talked about this before, is I never feel like I actually have a purpose in life. So I'm constantly exploring new and different things. Like whatever is interesting to me, I tend to get like obsessed with and fascinated by and try to learn everything about and then create like almost a mini career in that field before moving on to the next thing. And I don't necessarily think that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just what I do. So I've been in everything from, you know, I've started a bunch of businesses. Let's say I've started 20 businesses, 18 have failed, maybe two have succeeded, three have succeeded. I do a lot of investing. I write a lot of books, both in, let's say, kind of the personal improvement category and then the business category and an entrepreneurship category. I worked for a television company, HBO. So I've run hedge funds. I've done all sorts of stuff. I'm a parent.
Wild question to start with, just to throw this out there. You've said started, let's say, 20 companies and 18 have failed. How do you keep going when stuff seems to fall apart? The whole thought process we're going to get into of reinventing yourself. But
yeah,
how do you get through that moment? Because there's lots of people that we were talking about before on your show where they're young. They've gone out. Maybe they're 22 years old. They're a young guy. They've started one business, it went really well for a while, and then it just flat fell apart. And now they've labeled themselves a failure, they label themselves that they can never do it, it won't work. They don't know what to do with their life now that their one business failed. I mean, you've done it 18 times and kept going. What do you tell the person who's on one?
Well, first off, I want to get rid of the kind of failure myth. There's this whole failure pornography where like, oh, if I fail, that's a badge of honor. I failed at a business, so now I'm going to go on and succeed.
Sure.
It actually really sucks super bad to fail at a business. Like it's the worst. It's one of the worst feelings in the world because when you put all this time and energy into a business, I don't want to make this direct a comparison, but it's almost like this is your baby. This is what you've put all your energy into. And to watch it fail, maybe you've wasted the past 1-2 years of your life. It's hard in that moment to see what you've gained from the experience. I mean, of course, it's easy to say, oh, I'm going to learn from failure now. You can't say that the second after you fail. When you're actually on the floor, you're on the floor. But the only thing I could say is, I mean, the very first time I really failed at something where I lost millions and millions of dollars. I went completely broke. I was really upset. And I thought, that's it. I'm dead. Like, I won the lottery, and now I'm never going to make this kind of money again. I don't have the skill set. I'm stupid. I'm an idiot, as evidenced by the fact that I lost all this money, because we correlate intelligence and talent with money in our society. And so I'm just never going to have a chance again. And so I felt really bad for a long, long time. So that's the first time. I'll tell you a more recent time. This happened like a year and a half ago. I was on the set. A friend of mine was making a TV show, and I was on the set, you know, watching him film this great TV show with all these great stars in it and a great director. And it's now, the show has since been on the air. It's one of my favorite shows out there. Anyway, in the middle of the day, I got a phone call from another business that I'm involved in, a billion revenue business, and I had a significant stake in this business. And there was a special emergency board meeting, and I had to leave the set for like an hour to go on this board call. And we were essentially notified that we were going to be out of, like something had happened that nobody knew about, and we were going to be out of business within 3 days. So I lost, basically in that lunchtime on the set of this TV show, I lost $9 million. And then everybody out from the TV set was looking for me. They were going to start shooting more, you know, episodes. And so I go back up there, and I spent the rest of the day. And then I told my friend, the writer of the show, what had happened in the middle of the day. And he's like, "Oh, we thought you had just gone to the bathroom, and then you came back, and you were just as happy and curious and asking questions, and you stayed all the way to the end of shooting, like 9 p.m. that night, and we had no idea that anything was going on." And so what happens is you get better and better at realizing, you switch into a mindset where you realize, okay, something bad just happened, which means something good is about to happen in my life as well. Wow. Not that it's not like a karmic thing. Sure. It's just that the end of something, if you use it correctly, does mean that there's going to be some beginning. And so the beginning might simply be, well, now I don't have to spend as much time on this. I can now spend time on something I enjoy more. So for instance, yes, I lost this millions of dollars, but I really did not enjoy that being involved with that company. I really, I don't know the word, unenjoyed. It made me unhappy to be involved in that company. So now I didn't necessarily do something that the very next day made that money back, but I was able the very next day to read more or spend more time with kids or family or work on podcasting more. Like I was able to eliminate something from my life that I didn't enjoy and replace it with something I enjoyed. So in a weird way, I replaced that failure with one kind of failure with a different kind of success. And so you learn that skill. That's a skill. So you learn that skill more and more as you fail more and more. Again, not that failure is good, but you just learn the skill set of what to do with it.
Coping and reconstructing.
Yeah. And like, look, I will always be upset at what happened. Sure. Like, why did that guy do this or that? Or why did this company do this? Or why do people react that way? But I'm not going to, I wasn't going to let it take away this enjoyment of being on the set of this amazing TV show. And B, I had to figure out, okay, well, I didn't enjoy it anyway. So yeah, I'm not going to get that money back tomorrow. But what can I do tomorrow that I do enjoy now? So that's what happened.
Very cool. Now, what's interesting is you didn't always start off with a ton of money.
No, no, I had nothing. I came out of nothing. Yeah. I paid for all my college. Yeah. I had to graduate a year early, which was a whole story in itself, just so I could afford it. I moved to New York, lived in, you know, the worst place in the world. I worked at HBO for a while, and then just gradually built up. So.
And there's a way you built up that was really interesting. I know you've told this to me personally before. But it was your way of kind of opening the door to different relationships and places. And I remember you told me this about the TV show where you had written in and you identified like, hey, I'm a subscriber, I'm a reader, I wish you would do these things.
Yeah, so
and then you did the same with Amazon too and how that opened doors there.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the times when I had failed, I had it's like all these times I had failed. I have to remember which time specifically. So one time I was losing a home, losing everything once again, and I got really interested in investing. I had never been interested in investing before, which is probably why I lost so much money, because I had never really made a study of it. But I made a study of it. I got obsessed with it. I read hundreds of books. I wrote all this software modeling the stock markets. And then I decided, you know what? I'm going to write to all my favorite investors and say, hey, I'd love to meet you and take you out for a coffee and blah, blah, blah. And I wrote like 30 or 40 emails to all my heroes in the investing space. And I got zero replies, because it's not like Warren Buffett's going to say, Dolores, hold everything. James Altucher just wrote me and is going to buy me a free cup of coffee. I have to go downstairs and meet him immediately, or fly to New York and meet him immediately. Like no billionaire is thinking like that.
Yeah.
So that's the wrong way to meet people. And I get these emails, and you probably get these emails too, like people say, is there something I can do for you? yeah, don't give me more homework. Like, don't ask me to think of ideas for you to do for me. You come to me with the ideas. So what I started doing, and this is so critically important for everything, is I started writing down 10 ideas a day. And that does two things. One is you start exercising this idea muscle. And just like, you know, any muscle, like you go to the gym, if you didn't go to the gym for like 2 or 3 weeks, your muscles would deflate. Like you would notice it physically. Like you would look in the mirror and you'd say, oh, I didn't work out for the past 2 weeks. It's the same thing with the idea muscle. The idea muscle deflates or atrophies if you don't use it. The way to use it is pick a topic. Like, what's 10 books I want to write? What's 10 things I'm grateful for that I've never been grateful for before in my life? And write them down. So that's exercising the idea muscle. One step further is, okay, I want to meet Warren Buffett. Here's 10 ideas for how Warren Buffett can improve his business. And then I would send those to Warren Buffett.
Which is wild, because that's a big claim. I mean, to look at someone like Warren Buffett, or I think that, was it Jim Cramer?
Yeah, yeah. So just to add to that, it is a big claim. So yeah. Warren Buffett still won't respond to me. So,
not yet.
Not yet, eventually.
He hasn't read the 10.
Yeah. But Jim Cramer, I wrote him 10 ideas for articles he should write. So it's not about me at all. It's about him. 10 articles he should write that would make me subscribe to his service. And, you know, so I'm basically giving him something for free. I'm not asking for a coffee. I'm not saying, hey, I'll be up at 6 in the morning. I'll meet you wherever you are, because he's famous for meeting people at 6 in the morning. I'm not doing anything. I'm just saying, here are some, and I really thought about it. Here's 10 ideas right now of articles you could write that I would love to read, and if someone of your caliber wrote it. And he wrote back instantly. I had never contacted with him before. He wrote back instantly. He said, these are great ideas. Why don't you write these? And that started me as writing for thestreet.com. My editor at thestreet.com went to the Financial Times. Suddenly I was writing for the Financial Times. Then I started writing for Fortune, Forbes, Yahoo Finance. And then book publishers started contacting me. I've written 18 books since then. So that one email started a whole kind of career of writing. I don't even write about finance anymore. I have zero interest in writing about finance. But that started this whole career of writing. I got a $200 check for the first article I wrote for thestreet.com. I framed it. I had Jim Cramer sign it. About 6 months ago, I threw that out, but that's a whole other story. Yeah. But that started me off. So I sent 20 emails like that. Here's 10 ideas for you to improve your business that I think would be good. Two people responded. One was Jim Cramer. One was a hedge fund manager, where I literally gave my entire software package of modeling the markets. And I said, here's how it works. Here's how your employees can use it to figure out what patterns are happening in the markets right now. And go for it. Knock yourselves out. I don't care. And he actually allocated his personal money to me to invest in the markets. And then I started a hedge fund off that. And that ended. That was like a 5-year career for me. Or even more, because if you tie in with my other financial activities, it was like an 8 or 9 year career for me.
Wow.
So
an 8 or 9 year career off of a couple emails to people saying, hey, I've done my homework, I've learned about you, I've learned how you could actually improve, and here's legitimately 10 reasons or 10 things you can do to improve whatever you're doing, and two out of 10, so 20% return came back.
And that was then, by the way, that was 2002.
Yep.
I do that every week.
Wow.
So I send out emails constantly like that all the time. That's why I'm actually meeting Amazon this week over something similar, and I'm just constantly meeting people. I just got asked to be an advisor for a medical company, which, by the way, we were discussing at lunch, based in San Francisco, where I'm probably going to be an advisor for them.
Wow.
So these things happen to me all the time now, because serendipity, you create it. Like you have to create the luck in your life, and you do get lucky. People get lucky. It's all luck. It's luck that Jim Cramer wrote back to me, but he would never have written back to me if I didn't do this particular technique.
You didn't do the work. Generally.
Right.
And it's not just like, hey, here's my 10 things. You can market yourself better. You're welcome.
Right. I wasn't asking for reciprocity.
No.
Reciprocity is built into the universe. You don't have to ask for it.
Yep.
So if people are good people that you should be doing business with, they're going to automatically have reciprocity.
That's awesome. I love that. And I love that for people who are tuning in live for us right now. I would throw it their way and say, like you said, you could start your idea training, that muscle, each day. So each day, if they want to listen in and say, you know, what's 10 books you want to write, and you come up with those things. What are 10 things you're grateful for, you've never been grateful for?
Well, and the never been grateful for is important. Like, I heard you mention in the beginning of the Facebook Live that list three things you're grateful for, which is great. I think that's actually, it's shown to make people happier. But what I try to do is, like, every day I can be grateful for, like, my children, for instance. Sure. Oh, I'm so grateful I have children. Sure. But that is easy. Sure. So I try to solve what are called difficult gratitude problems. So if something bad is happening in my life, how can I dig through that to find what to be grateful for? Because that will exercise that idea muscle a little more. You want to sweat, right? So just like in the gym, it's not working if you're not sweating a little bit. So you want to make sure that idea muscle, or that gratitude muscle in this case, is sweating a little bit. So of course I'm grateful for my kids, but how can I be grateful for, I don't know, how can I be grateful for losing that $9 million in one day? So, or grateful, I'm just trying to think of, I had some business issue last week where somebody was really, just inappropriately, really angry at me. And instead of just constantly thinking, well, I'm going to write back to him and say this, how can I be grateful for, where can I find the opportunities in how this person is treating me? And of course, I did find the opportunities and I'm working on them now. And and everybody, including him, is happy. That's how things work in life.
Nice. I love that. Speaking, you mentioned this a little bit ago, minimalism, cutting things down. I know there was a big article in New York Times that I read about you.
By the way, I was on the cover of the fashion section of the New York Times, and about this article. It was like, why James Altucher only lives... Fashion Week is like next or last week. It was the week before, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, and so my kids, I drive my kids crazy now because I tell them, they're two teenage girls, right, daughters. So I tell them, listen, you have to listen to my fashion advice because I was on the cover of the fashion section. And they're like, I don't think so, Daddy. We're not listening to your fashion advice. But I think they thought about it for a quick second. I don't know.
Pamela, did he get you?
I've totally revamped my wardrobe.
Because of the...
I'm down to 10 things.
Okay, down to 10 things. This is the new style. So this is what we're going for. If you read the New York Times, you've seen the fashion section, this man has been on the cover of the fashion section, and he's about to share how he did it.
Well, what I... not to be a fashion icon. You can tell I'm not a fashion icon. But
what were you there for? Why were you on the cover?
Well, I mean, in general, over the past few years, I've written a lot of books detailing my failures and how I bounce back from them. And I always say advice is autobiography. So I never say this is what you should do. I just say this is what I did to kind of bounce back.
Just to throw this thought out there real quick, I'm a huge proponent of that. Because in the past, if you went in the 80s and the 90s and even 2000s, there's lots of people who tell you, here's my 5-step formula for success. Follow these steps and you too will be successful. And I think that's a dated way to go about it, because what we're learning now is everyone's different. Now, I think those steps are radically and totally useful as a model of where to start. And you have to be able to use them to get yourself going and understand the basics. Then as an individual, we have to say, okay, that's what works, but how do I massage it in a way that really works for me? And so I don't believe in preaching like, here's my 5 golden pillars to success. I believe in saying, hey, these are 5 pillars that work for me, like you, and take them for what they are, use what works out of it for you, and then make it your own and do something great with it and hopefully pay it forward.
Right,
so
exactly.
What you said there.
Yeah, I think that's very important, because it's like, I'm going to quote the great personal improvement guru, Mike Tyson, and he basically says you can have all the plans in the world, but once you're hit in the face, the plans are out the window.
Yeah.
So, like, if I'm taking just someone else's advice and thinking, oh, my life's going to be great now, it won't work. I have to really build up what works for me and what I know works for me and what I'm confident in and so on. So I'd written all these books, and a lot of it kind of enforces the idea. You know, it talks about personal growth, personal achievement, and so on. But a lot of it is that experiences are greater than goods at the end of the day. And I had been for years throwing out more and more of my belongings. But finally, I still had like an entire house full of belongings. I had an apartment full of belongings. And so I hired somebody I was going to go out of town, just go to both places, throw everything out, don't call me. Like, so furniture, computers, books, either throw out, keep, sell, or donate. So that was that was her mandate. So I didn't just throw out everything. But some things you can't donate.
There's a trash can somewhere with lots of valuable
stuff. Oh, there was 80 trash cans. Okay. It wasn't one trash can. But, you know, like her family took the bed, her cousins took the computer, and then I had iPads, I had old phones, I had TVs, and, you know, the things you accumulate. Also, things from childhood, like just the things you accumulate over life. And she said, are you sure you don't want me to call you during this? What if something's of sentimental value, like photographs? And I said, don't even talk to me. She did call me once. She said, look, you have a framed college diploma. And I'm like, nobody has asked me about that diploma in 25 years. Just burn that. It's a wooden diploma. Like, burn the diploma. And so I ended up with one bag that's like a small carry-on bag. Not even a carry-on bag. It's like a small pouch with like two or three outfits in it, and then one bag that's like a backpack that I have a computer, an iPad, and a phone in. And that's it. That was all my belongings. And I didn't have any apartment anymore, so I gave up the two leases that I had. And so now I've just been doing Airbnbs where it's all furnished, and I don't have to think about, you know, contracts or this or that, and I'm able to move around. And again, that's just for me. It's not appropriate. I'm not recommending it to anybody. It was just a direction I've been going in for a long time, and it allows me and the people I'm with to focus more on the experiences in my life instead of any kind of accumulation of goods.
Yeah. Speaking of people you're with, Pamela, what's your experience with it? We were talking over lunch and you said, listen, the 15 thing's great, but I'm a lady and I need a little bit more options clothes-wise. And I'll give you an interesting story. We were traveling on the road for about five, we were going to move to Florida. We were going to buy a house in South Florida. The week of closing, the bank decided to try to change the offer, so the deal fell through.
Really?
We decided not to go through with it. We had 15 business flights out of Fort Lauderdale for the rest of the year already booked, and we went on. Shit, what are we gonna do? So we took a compass, we drew a big circle of flights to figure out where flights go from Fort Lauderdale, hopefully to find a cool place to live, rent an apartment for a while in a cheap flight zone so we can get quick. We drew a big circle, landed up in Costa Rica, living on the beach in Tamarindo for 2.5 months.
Wow.
Then from there, we came back up. We taught on a cruise ship from Florida, 14 days, 7 countries, back up to San Diego. From there, hopped in an RV with 3 friends and did a 20-day volunteer road trip back across the southern route back to Tampa. Landed in Tampa, we were going to wait there till it warmed up and then move up to Vancouver for the summer, and we were just going to keep going. We love that stuff. And when we got to Tampa, we had been almost about 4.5, almost 5 months out of a suitcase, and we had just 2 bags with us. Like,
dumb. And you realize you didn't miss any of the, like, where did you keep stuff in storage at the time? I'm assuming you had stuff in storage. So you had, like, a shit pile of stuff somewhere. Yeah.
And what was interesting was, at one point, I remember the sweetest look on my wife, who's filming's face. She looked at me and she says, listen, I'm a lady. We've gone from beach to business event to formal affair to volunteer road trip to building a house with Habitat for Humanity in New Orleans. So like construction workers to weeding out a meditation garden for the Children's Hospital in Austin to
Polar Tundra.
Tundra, which is freezing driving through. You know,
can't wear a runway dress there.
You can't. And also, I mean, your bathroom tank freezes if you're in an RV and it gets too cold.
Right.
So you have frozen stuff. Like, we went through all this. And she's like, all I have is one big double bag. She said, can I please get my dresser out of storage and at least get a couple more options? And I think as a guy, we might have a different experience
completely
than a lady. So I'd love to know your experience with the 15 things, like combing it all the way down. I know you've also kind of jumped in to an extent.
I was a bit of a minimalist.
Okay,
as it was.
Okay.
But I think it's very freeing to have less items. You know, you just take the best, forget the rest.
That's awesome.
I think you can apply that even to, like, learning from other people, as you were
saying.
Take
the best, leave the rest. I love that. And we think about this. We're looking right now at even packing up a lot of our stuff in our Tampa house, Airbnb-ing it, because we're not going to be out of time, and just going some more and just keep going. We love the pop from place to place to place just because we really enjoy that.
Well, and again,
I don't know if we can do 15 items because we tend to pack at least a couple duffel bags and backpacks and stuff.
But the one thing you can do is view 15 items as a metaphor also. So, okay, I'm not going to worry about more than, like, most people worry about lots of things and they don't realize it. I'm going to minimize the things I worry about, or I'm going to minimize, you know, the kind of things I try to achieve in life. Like, you don't have to achieve everything that you set out to achieve. So there's lots of ways in which you got to enjoy, you know, As Ryan Holiday, who wrote Ego is the Enemy, once told me, Alexander the Great doesn't care that Alexandria was named after him.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, we all die, and it's a cliche to say, of course, but you got to just kind of enjoy every moment.
Yeah. What's interesting, and I'll give you a metaphor, but also something fascinating in our lives. So I moved out when I was 18, took whatever stuff I wanted, and has built everything since, kind of in my own way, clothes. I think I do have my college degree, like little simple stuff I've collected. But my mom specifically has some old things that she collected and was like, these are your baseball cards when you were young, which are probably worth something.
Right, they always think it's worth something, the baseball cards. Yeah. They're worth nothing, but they always think, you have the thing, number 237 comic book, is worth nothing.
Maybe. And, the grandkids need it.
Grandkids need it. And you see what you collected when you were their age. Yeah. I have my old football helmet, like from high school, like random stuff. So she's collected a whole storage unit full of stuff for me in Los Angeles. And it's sitting there. We pay the bill every month because it wouldn't be right to ask anyone else to. But we keep laughing and thinking, like, why is there a storage unit full of stuff we have not seen for 4 years, literally just sitting there?
Right.
We don't even know what's in there. I can't say we don't care because I'm sure it's part of history, but it'd be nice to, like, see it and let it go.
So, no, but that's exactly it. Like, I didn't want...
When family decides to try to collect stuff for you.
Well, I didn't. So I ultimately had everything in one of my places. And I currently don't want to outsource to my children the decision to get rid of my stuff. So eventually I'm going to die and they get my stuff. Yeah, so they now I have solved their problem, which is they have nothing to sort through with me. So there's just nothing.
Taking care of future generations.
Yes.
It's clutter. It's a burden.
Yeah.
On your mind, you know, on space.
And, it really is.
Yeah.
I remember watching a TED Talk. I forget who it was, but they were talking about how much storage space is in the United States. And it's enough storage space that if we emptied it all out of just everyone's extra junk, it would be enough to put housing or roof over every single person in the entire country.
Huh, that's interesting.
And instead, it just sits in storage doing nothing and accumulating money. I mean, good investment business for someone who owns it.
We're a storage culture. We love shows like Hoarders. Yeah. And these storage companies actually are great companies. They generate cash forever.
Yeah.
So, and then if you stop, not only that, if you stop paying them, they'll sell your stuff on eBay. Yeah, they make more money. It's like a giant pawn shop.
It's crazy. But going down this route, I know you have a book called Reinventing Yourself that's coming out, and this minimalism route, where is it leading?
I don't know. I mean, everything's an adventure, so I don't have to know. I just...
That's one of my top values. It's love, health, adventure.
Yeah, well, I think it's an important thing to be curious about the world because you don't know all the answers, but it's fun to be curious. Like, and I think it's a big problem in the education system that everybody's focused on memorizing facts rather than asking questions. When you look at all the great scientific discoveries ever, all started with questions. None of them started with facts. So, but the educational system's in the reverse.
I just saw a video. Michael Morwin did some research about the education system between the United States and Sweden, and I saw a little short clip. Was it Sweden? No. Finland, I think. Sweden or Finland. Right up there.
One of those blonde countries.
One of the Nordic countries. And so both of us were, like, battling for, like, 34th position or something in the world, and they changed something. And when they changed it, all of a sudden, we are still somewhere in, like, 34, and they went all the way to number one over the last so many years.
Huh.
And when he went there to interview him, he said, "What did you guys change?" And they said, "We believe the kids should be playing more." So they took their school day from, like, 7 or 8 hours all the way down to 2-3 hours, including an hour lunch break and recess break.
Huh.
So they spend 2 hours a day in class. They have zero homework. And that's how they've become some of the best students on earth.
I totally believe it because... And I'm going to ask you a question, and it's a question I ask a lot of people. I ask entire audiences this question. Every year of high school and college, we learned about Charlemagne, the greatest emperor in European history. But I'm going to ask you, when was Charlemagne born?
No clue.
No clue. Just guess. Give me a guess, because it doesn't matter, because I could tell you the range of guesses.
I'm not even connecting to Charlemagne.
Okay, so I asked one guy, I was on his podcast, he majored in European history, and he told me like 1300 something. And then I ask audiences, they never get it right. They usually say around 1300.
Okay, give him a half second. If you're watching right now live, in the comment section, throw us, when was Charlemagne? Let's see what their guesses are. Let's give him a shot.
All right, we can see. They can Google it, though, is the problem.
No, don't Google it. Just take your best guess. Type it in the comment section, Charlemagne.
Yes.
Where were they?
He in Europe? France, like kind of what is now France, like
okay,
Gaul.
So around France, Gaul. So What are the answers popping up? Anyone guessing?
Nothing yet.
Nothing yet?
All right, so I'll just say, so 752. And so, but we learned it every single year of high school and college. We learned it. We got tested on it. We remembered it, and we answered it. But it just goes to show you how little we actually retain from just being like force-fed facts. We don't retain any of it. But questions, you remember, like, you know, Einstein would ask the question, well, what happens if one person's moving the speed of light watching another person who's standing on the ground? From that question, he develops a theory of relativity. He didn't start with a bunch of equations and said, okay, let me try to prove this. He asked a question and wondered out loud to himself what happens. And that's how every discovery happens. So, you know, art, what happens if we take a soup can and say this is a work of art? Andy Warhol asked the question and now he's got a $30 million soup can. So that's how stuff's created.
So the question right now for you is, what happens if I downsize completely the 15 items?
It's like we were talking earlier. I want to see what gets me excited, and then that's what I'll pursue. So I'm always in a process of reinventing. Everybody always is. I want to write more. I want to write fiction, perhaps, which is completely different for me. I want to, you know, meet more people, try more things, and also figure out better and better ways to be happy, which is an incredibly difficult thing to do in this world.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to try to do.
Yeah.
We've been talking about on these Facebook Lives and the podcast, The Happiness Advantage by Sean Aker from Harvard.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is back in the day, you know, people would tell you to be happy, but then they would tell you a bunch of personal development tactics or tools that some guru guy says is the way to happiness. And you don't know. And it's all subjective. And you can look at case studies, but there's no real proof. But now, thanks to positive psychology, there's people actually studying this and showing you, like, hey, we took 200 studies, 275,000 people, and between all these people across the board, if you do these things every day, simple little activities, it actually makes you happier within 21 days, according to 275,000 people across 200 studies. And it's like, wow, that's legit. Like, there's actual proof now coming out in reputable places, too, which is the other part, because you might have a private company do a study, and you're like, okay, well, who are these characters?
But it's still hard to get into the habit of even those 21 days.
Yep.
So I'm going to pitch you an idea for a TV show. You tell me what you think.
Okay.
So it's called, I think we know a lot of the same cast of characters.
Yep.
So the show's called Gurus Gone Wild. So and the whole idea is, all these like self-help people are trying to build their businesses, trying to live their own practices and stuff. But you and I both know they all, when you're down to having lunch and drinks or whatever with them, they're all having problems. Like, everybody has their issues.
Something.
You can't get rid of them. It's not about getting rid of issues. It's about how you cope with them.
Yep.
So it's just kind of funny, like, kind of, in some cases, the contradictions are extreme with what they recommend and how they live. And I just thought it would be a fun idea for kind of an almost fiction, like an Entourage-style TV show.
It'd be hilarious.
I think it'd be fun.
Awesome. I thought it would be neat. We started doing adventure retreats just because, in all honesty, I love adventure and I love giving back and
sure.
I love traveling. So I thought, how cool would it be to get paid to actually travel, go on adventures, volunteer, and have fun? Like, if you can get paid to do that, I don't know what job description that is, but I'm down. And so I thought about it one day, and a friend of mine challenged me. She's like, why don't we just do it? And so I was on this little trip on the Semester at Sea ship, and she was like, hey, there's speakers on board. And the speakers were like Sandra Day O'Connor, the first female Supreme Court justice, Julian Bond, the hotshot lawyer for Martin Luther King. Like, these are historical figures of history that have done things, like amazing things in history. And she's like, why don't we go ask if you can speak on the next one? I was like, that's really sweet. And I know you believe in me a lot, but I don't think I necessarily fall into that category of history. Like, I don't think I fit next to Sandra Day O'Connor and Julian Bond.
You never
and
know.
She's like, that's okay. Let's just ask. And we went and asked, and they're like, sure, we'd love to have you. I'm like, really? So first, I felt incredibly humbled. And when we introduced ourselves to the community, the average age on this ship was like 70. So I'm like, I'm 30 years old. I'm just, you know, beyond excited to be here. Like, if I can share something and help you guys, I'd happy to. And I'll share with you everything I know. Hopefully it's useful to this community. And they loved it. They brought me back a bunch of times in a row. But while we were there, it was interesting. We took people with us into this adventure. And what I found was people would sign up for the vacation aspect of it, the adventure side of it. We'd like go do active volcano boarding. You hike up a volcano and you literally sled down a volcano. It takes an hour and 45 minutes to hike up, 45 seconds to get back down to the truck.
Oh my gosh.
It's insane. It's really fun. And I never thought sledding would be crazy, but how steep the damn hill is freaks people out. From there, we volunteered with the mayor of Manta, Ecuador, and we brought Christmas to 200 families who couldn't afford it locally. So we brought Santa and elves and like all this cool stuff for them. We helped build a school and a house for a community in Guatemala. Like all this beautiful stuff. Now, what's wild is we took people who most of them were doing okay. I mean, good enough to afford. It was inexpensive. It was like $100 a night. It was just cheap for a vacation for that long. But it was, you know, they could afford it. They went. They had the ability to get time off. So they're in a kind of a privileged position thus far. But not all of them were in the best place mentally and emotionally in their life. And we had some people, one lady actually, who joined us, and we didn't know this till afterwards. She told us at the very end. She said, I got on this ship because my intention was my house just burnt down. I lost all my stuff. I took my money, and I invested it to rebuild my home, the insurance money that I got back. The head contractor told me 2 weeks ago that he embezzled the money, and there isn't any left, and sorry, I'm out, and I'm not going to get a house back. And he didn't pay any of the workers. So I took the rest of my life savings and gave it to the workers because otherwise their families won't eat. I'm basically going to the gym every morning and taking the shower there, living in my car and reporting the work as if nothing's wrong so no one knows. And I positioned all my belongings in a way that would be easy for my, you know, my kids to take care of if I'm no longer here. I plan on getting on this ship and throwing myself off the back at some point and just saying it's over.
Oh, my gosh.
And she said, I happen to have listened to your dad's stuff. So when I saw you on board, I thought, you know, how cool. It'd be fun to kind of poke in and see what he's going to share. She joined our little class. She sat in every day with us, went through the whole thing. And she said there was a couple days on board, one of which that we were working on, like, getting rid of past stories, just a simple little exercise I learned years ago. Two of which, the second other time that helped her was volunteering and helping other people in need. She said, between those 2 days, I decided that I should stay on this planet and keep going. And at the end of the day, she stood up and told us all that story and said, I just want to say thanks for saving my life.
It's and a great story. I remember
being like, huh? Because the way I was looking at it was, if I could get paid to take a vacation, share some stuff that seems really valuable to me and important with others, volunteer and have a lot of fun.
And save a life.
I didn't think that wasn't on the list when I originally planned it. But I'm like, wow, this can actually change, like, save someone's life. I just thought this was a random cool idea of how to get paid to do something I thought was cool. And that thought process, when you connect it with how you're going about life and what you're doing and how you're showing up, it's really amazing. I was trying to connect the dot there. I forgot. I got lost in that story.
Well, the idea of adventure. So
the idea of adventure and connecting it.
You never know what the outcomes.
Different stages.
People being, oh, how to be happy. And what we found was, oh, TV show, I'm sorry. That's what it was. So in that, I always thought it would be really neat to take someone who's kind of like down and out in a really tough place in their life and take them on some type of trip to get them out of their own world in their head and give them a place where they could have a little adventure to see the world or some part of the world, maybe another city. It doesn't have to be anywhere exotic, but like take them a couple states over or something.
Yeah.
They're outside of their town. So they see a different perspective. Put them in a place that they realize they have a lot of value to add to another human being's life because they dig within themselves and have to share with someone else something of value, which makes them feel valuable in that moment. And then to wake them up a little bit, you know, give them an adventure, give them something fun that's thrilling.
That's a fun idea.
But I thought to go with that TV show, if you took people and threw them into that mix, maybe learning from those gurus gone wild, and maybe the adventure is going to visit these gurus in different places and doing these things with them. Something like that. I just think it would have a profound effect on people watching because I've learned the random act of kindness thing of doing something kind for others. The person doing it gets a kick of dopamine and serotonin. The people receiving it gets a kick of dopamine and serotonin. And anyone who observes. So on TV, to have something like that consistently being done for the viewers would actually be getting kicks of serotonin and dopamine in their mind, which is making them happier and feel better and healthier.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. You got me thinking on
just,
that.
Just to add to your TV show, I always thought that would be a neat thing. And
yeah.
Again, I signed up for the cruise because I literally thought, like, in my mind, how cool would it be to literally be able to go on free cruises every year and do cool shit like this, and then you could make money doing this? Oh, my God, this is the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And then to have someone's life be saved because of it, I was like, my mind was blown.
That's
and
great.
I've seen other stuff like that, but when you have your first tangible experience with it, like it rewires some circuitry in your head of like, whoa,
mm-hmm.
this is cool.
Yeah.
Some people just need a little bit of inspiration.
Just to get that jolt.
And then they can go to the next level. Yeah. And then they can just carry forward with it.
Just the right time, the right moment, just someone to be like, hey.
Yeah.
Just a little spark. And all of a sudden it lights and then they go again.
Yeah, like branches just keep.
Yeah. You know. The other one I thought that'd be really neat, and I don't know why this is catching me right now, and I don't know why it's in this conversation. I always thought it'd be neat. There's in this space, specifically right now in history, the mental health space, it's struggling. And if you've ever gone and visited any mental health facilities, they're very calm and relaxing. They kind of remind me of a day spa. I'm like, shit, I should check in here just to relax every now and then.
Yeah, I was just thinking. But for me.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. Like, I'll go kick back in the garden. Like, just let me be. I'm going to chill here for a while. It is quite relaxing. But the way people are treated isn't all that well. Because a lot of times they'll just met them up on a bunch of stuff to get them to sleep or relax or something. And then because of the environment and people are dealing with so many people in a state of mania or like ups and downs and bipolar and all this other stuff, they tend to react towards them instead of really care for them and love them through. And they're big-hearted people who are taking care of them, but they can only last so long till they kind of snap and they start treating them bad. I always thought it would be neat, specifically for young guys, to create a place that isn't a mental health facility, but it's kind of like a boot camp to build the right habits, rituals, just simple daily things that would build them into young men. And I don't know for women. I don't mean to cut women out at all. I just understand a man's world better because I was a young man and I grew up through those places. It might be the same for a young woman to go through this type of thing, but I need a woman to help me design it. For a young guy, there's certain things to do, like face your fear, stand up against obstacles, challenge yourself, build a community, little things, be a contributor to the community. I have a feeling if you could build like a camp like this, that you check in for a year when you're in your 20s, and it just builds the right structure that you can go out and build your life on top of. The military used to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't think it does anymore.
I think men are lacking. I think that's definitely would be it's a good idea, and men are lacking it. And that's like a new space.
It's just a new space. Yeah. I think it was just something you can go. You check in for 6 months or a year. You contribute to society. Like you go do volunteer work. You build something, maybe build a business on the side or something creative if you want, or do whatever you want. You contribute to the community that you're locally in. You build them into a solid human being. And I think you'd have a lot of insight into this. The reason I brought it up is because you've gone through so many things that a lot of these young guys either give up over, freak out over, quit and throw the towel in over. And you're resilient as hell. Like, you just keep going.
Sometimes.
Well, you're 18. I mean, 18 out of 20 failed, and you just stood up, dusted off. You went through a shit moment. You're real. Yeah. You didn't pretend like it wasn't there. You owned it. And you suffered through it for a little while, but then you stood up and kept going. And you've helped people do that, too, through your books and other podcasts and stuff. So you know this. I just, with a TV show thought, I thought that would be another thought to throw out there.
Yeah, no, it's
people are interested.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting thought. Like all these things are interesting that, you know, because we're all looking for ways to essentially. I mean, the world's becoming increasingly complex. The economy is increasingly complex, which you think doesn't matter, but it does because it's how we support our family and ourselves and our retirement and so on. And how we deal with this complexity is getting more and more difficult. And you know, learning these skills is valuable.
And it's simple stuff, but it's. Like we were saying earlier, it's simple, but not everyone does it consistently.
No, and it's hard because it's simple, but it's hard.
Yeah.
Sometimes simple is hard.
But hard to consistently do.
People want to keep doing the complex because they think that's like going to a job every day. They think even though that's actually complex and more difficult in our society than ever, that's their easy way out at the moment.
Yeah.
They think.
And the wild part is with machines and artificial intelligence, a lot of that stuff's going to be replaced really soon.
Well, look, driverless cars will eliminate 90% of the auto industry.
Driverless cars, factory workers. I mean, I saw a robot the other day that cooks and cleans the kitchen. Like, you type in the...
Oh, that was in my house.
No. So I only have 15 things, but the robots do everything else.
Lots of robots.
But it's wild, because this thing, like, cooks, cleans, it chops up the food, cooks it on the thing.
Really?
The
wow. Timing, the oh, my gosh.
I saw a robot that gardens for you. You put it over a garden box, it perfectly keeps the temperature of the soil at just the right temperature, gives it just the right amount of water. Mm. It de-weeds, it pre-sees weeds coming, and it picks them out before they can even sprout. It's amazing. I mean, the future is going to take away jobs from so many people that currently exist, but to have the flexibility to say, like you've done, to say, hey, how do I reinvent myself? I mean, yeah. I've been a taxi driver for 32 years, and now taxi drivers are no longer needed. Now what the hell do I do with myself?
Right.
And you're going to have that conversation and really, truly come up with a plan. I'd love to know not to give away the book or anything, and I know it's not out yet, but what maybe one or two tips on how when that moment happens for them? Because you've had it a handful of times, and it's some people have never had it, and they're going to be 50 years old, and the first time in their life have to look in the mirror and go, what the heck do I do with myself now?
I mean, a lot of it is being aware that you don't have to know the answer. So just know that you're in a state of reinvention. So keeping an eye out for, okay, what excites me, what interests me, writing those 10 ideas a day down, reading as much as possible, going on adventures so you learn from things outside of your comfort zone. You know, the comfort zone looks like this tiny little circle, but the real life zone that you live in is a much bigger circle. So finally kind of figuring out more and more ways to get outside of that comfort zone into the real life zone is important. And you see in every profession how people did it. You build on the people who came before you. So read the biographies of great people and see how they did it. But then you figure out how to do it yourself. Everyone's got their own path.
Dig it. Very, very cool. Well, I want to be respectful of your time. I'm trying to see. I know your little ones are here. It's 2:25.
That's good. Yeah.
I need to start wrapping up. I'd love to know if there's any questions coming in. Nothing. No questions coming in. Okay.
It's a Saturday afternoon. Everyone's enjoying their day.
Hopefully, they're all tuning in. Yeah. If not, they will be tuning in. So if you have questions for Jamin, you write them in the comment section. I'll see if I can possibly pass some of them forward and get
definitely
some answers for you. But I'd love to know if they're looking for you and they want to learn more and they want to. Where do they go? How do we connect everyone with you?
You know, if you just go to jamesaltucher.com, yeah, that's good. Or buy the book, Choose Yourself. That's yep, like my favorite book that I've written.
Nice.
And either one of those.
So a couple insights on the book. Choose Yourself. What is maybe two or three lines that they would understand what they're getting?
I mean, just the idea that we've kind of outsourced our decision-making throughout our lives to parents, peers, bosses, colleges, the government, and, you know, agents or, you know, recruiters. And a lot of that we can now pull back. Like, we have to choose ourselves for success because no one else is going to choose us for success. We have to start doing it more and more ourselves. And I kind of give how I did it for myself through all these ups and downs. And so that's a quick summary of Choose Yourself.
I love it. And then the new book comes out?
I think November 15th.
Okay.
So we're aiming for that.
So keep your eyes open. Somewhere around November 15th, sort of. So keep your eyes out. New book called
Reinvent Yourself.
Reinvent Yourself after Choose Yourself. Definitely check those out. Check out this man's podcast. It's awesome. I've been on it. There's been amazing, amazing, amazing other guests on there. Is it the Altucher Show?
The James Altucher Show.
James Altucher Show. So check that out. Go and join that.
I can't even say it. James Altucher Show.
And thank you both for hanging out with us. Pamela, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
James, thank you, sir. Mush Pop, Amanda, thank you so much for filming. And
I waved.
Wave in front of the camera.
Hopefully everyone who's listening in, we look forward to seeing you next week for another amazing episode of our Learn It, Live It, Give It podcast. And those of you on the Facebook, we'll see you tomorrow. See you later.
Bye.